All right, folks, welcome back to the Ice Mountain with Swire Football Podcast. MWR.com is our website. You know what that is. If not, check it out. Jeremy Moss here, hanging out with a good buddy, Matt Kennerly. Twitter, Facebook, all that good stuff, MWC Wire. So, first off, Matt, are you gonna make it through the show? Because I heard...
I promise I will make it through the show.
Because our buddy Raj is more of a... Well, he's a... Well... He was just concerned for your health. He's like, I would have just turned it off and said, I quit.
Well, he has some well-earned bravado as a Boise fan. And, you know, obviously we're going to talk about the Broncos in a little bit as we recap week two. But, yeah, I'm a little bit different. And some of that has to do with being a Fresno State guy. You know, I'm kind of used to games like this. But we'll talk about that more.
We'll get to that. So week two is in the books. We have... we'll get to all the games. You know what's going to happen. You had Aztecs squeaking by. You had a CSU. What the heck? You have all sorts of stuff going on. Let's just dive into it because we got 12 games here. We don't need to spend 2 hours because I don't want to talk for 2 hours that often. So let's get to it.
I don't think anybody wants to listen to us for 2 hours.
You'd be surprised. That when we did the Mountain West preview, the big one, or the Boise preview, excuse me, both of those. The big preview we did was almost 2 hours. People listened to it. The Mountain West one, when Raj joined for a bit and then you joined for part of it, that was a good almost 3 hours, and that was one of our most listened to ever. So
sure. Well, let's not push our luck.
I know, I'm just saying thank you for that, but still, regardless, you know how it is, it's about an hour or so, give or take. Oh, yeah. 5-10 minutes. So let's just get going with New Mexico Wisconsin. We'll start that one. Is that a good one to go with, I guess?
Yeah, let's jump into it.
So I didn't see many of these games live, but when I was scoreboard watching, I'm like, is my phone refreshing properly, especially for this game? Because you had New Mexico 7-0, New Mexico 7-3, 10-7 for a good portion. What the heck happened? New Mexico showed up and did something? They actually throw the ball? Oh, but it's sort of like the Utah State game last year versus Wisconsin, 45-14. That was the end result, but... The Lobos gained a lot of credit for how this game played out for about almost three quarters.
Definitely. And I mean, I think that, you know, the defense especially was, there were a lot of question marks all over the place going into this season. And, you know, even though they weren't able to hold out for four quarters, they deserve a lot of credit for putting up a fight early. You know, they really kind of took the game to Wisconsin early. You know, I believe they forced, you know, I'm trying to remember how many turnovers they forced in the first half. They forced two fumbles. They recovered one. They had the I don't know if it was a strip sack or if it was credited as an interception, where the linebacker Tohi, I'm trying to remember his first name, and I apologize that I can't remember it. But, you know, they had a big return off of that. And even though the offense kind of failed to find a lot of traction, like they had that very successful first drive where they ran right down the field, 17 plays. Whew. On the very first drive, 87 yards for a touchdown. I mean, even though they weren't able to keep that up, you know, I think that, you know, they showed a lot better overall than I think any of us would have expected. And it's kind of a bummer that Tavaka Tuioti wasn't able to kind of finish it out because he was injured late in the first half. And he was replaced by Sherron Jones, who, you know, he was okay, but, you know, he had those couple of interceptions that, you know, if you go back and look at the replays, I think he definitely wants those back. You know, one of those was after that, you know, kind of strip sack interception, whatever you want to call it, that they had against Hornibrook. And he just kind of sailed it over the receiver's head right into the arms of a Wisconsin defensive back. And, you know, maybe that's the kind of mistake that, you know, a young and developing offense is going to make. But, you know, if Tuioti's out for more than a week or two, it kind of throws into question, I think, what this offense is going to be able to do going forward, even as the schedule eases up a little bit.
Yeah, he had it's officially a head injury. No update of what it is, so it could be going through concussion protocol for who knows how long. But, like, that one interception, it was 3rd and 8 – inside near the red zone, 26-yard line. It's picked off in the end zone by Scott Nelson there. That could have been 3 points. Who knows? But I don't think either of us are saying if Tuioti would play the whole game, they would have won. Probably would have been a little bit closer because Wisconsin eventually, like Jonathan Taylor, got his yards, what, 220-something, 200-plus yards on the ground.
253.
Oh, 253. Ooh, I need to give him all those yards. Three touchdowns. But it could have been closer. Who knows? If the not turn the ball over is it's issues. But for them playing as well as they did for a while, they didn't give up. They had a huge drive because Wisconsin, like, they're a people can playoff team essentially, going to the national title, winning the Big Ten. And Lobos hung around for a lot longer than most people thought. But you're right. I think the big thing, if Jones is your starter, not that it, who knows, give him. Here's the thing too. He gets thrown into a game at Camp Randall, 70,000+ people there, 75,000 people. That's pretty intimidating.
Yeah.
So give him a week if he's going to play. I assume he'll probably take be the one guy for a little bit. And they got New Mexico State, which is a big deal, rivalry game. Aggies aren't as good as we thought they'd be, but it's still a pretty big deal for that in-state game. And I guess the only other thing, like, I remember I mentioned, if they play, like, their best game ever, they still wouldn't come out on top. They weren't mm-hmm. close to that, but when you look at, like, third down efficiency, 6-13 is pretty good. Only one penalty, had two turnovers, or they're forced two turnovers. Some of the smaller stuff, the stuff there, like, is why they are staying in the game. The time possession was good for that first drive. It's just that Wisconsin. And the passing game, like, we know Hornibrook is just a, he's a, kind of like Christian Chapman, essentially. He does good things. Not going to be amazing like what he does with Aztecs, but he can do a couple drives here and there, put up some numbers. He was 8 of 11, but he only had 148 yards, which I guess only is a good, pretty efficient way throwing to A.J. Taylor, but it's not like it was. They were able to slow that down a little bit, I guess. They didn't allow them to beat him in the air. But Wisconsin is just going to run over everybody, so be sort of optimistic and just hope Tuiati's healthy enough to play. I guess that's a big thing, right?
Yeah, and I think that in the weeks going forward, one of the things we talked about going into this game was how is the running game going to respond, you know, after kind of coming out a little bit flat against Incarnate Word. And, you know, I don't know. I think if you go back and look at what they were able to do, especially when the game was still competitive, you know, in the first half, they ran the ball 21 times and only got 37 yards. That, you know, that's not going to get the job done. And so that, I think, is still something that I'm waiting to see, you know, and especially against an Aggies defense that's kind of reeling now, especially. We'll talk about them more in a minute. You know, this is a very good opportunity for New Mexico to kind of right a lot of wrongs that have shown up in the first couple of weeks.
So we'll find out more next week. But I think so. It's hard to tell where New Mexico is at playing FCS and playing Wisconsin. I'm assuming, or I know for sure, next week we'll know kind of how good they are after playing the, I guess I'd put us more on the level.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think they can be encouraged by the fact for that sure. They were able to keep drives going here and there. Like, they weren't totally shut down on those real critical plays. They ended up 6 of 13 on third downs, which was not quite as well as Wisconsin did. They were 6 of 9 on the defensive end. Mm-hmm. But that's not nothing. You know, being able to complete or to be able to convert about 50% of those opportunities is still a fairly significant positive, I think, for a Lobos offense.
Yeah, and like one last note here before we go on. It looks like Jones is going to start practice as the one guy this week versus the Aggies. But then also, like Bob Davies says it perfectly, it's bottom line, it's 10-7 in the third quarter. We create that turnover and we have a chance and we turn the ball over three times in the second half. Defense got worn down. So it's this isn't like the Utah State game last year where it was 10-0, and then in the second quarter they rolled off a million points. This was reasonably close. Like, there was a small amount of doubt that this could be an upset or even way closer than we thought in the midway third quarter. So that is encouraging. So should we move on to the next one?
Yeah, let's do that.
So I don't my ESPN's being wonky here. I know UConn Boise's not next, so I'll pass on that. Let's go to Nevada Vanderbilt. Oh, boy.
That was disappointing.
Can I rescind my I like Nevada?
You're already committed to that.
I am committed.
I wouldn't let one bad game dissuade you from that. But I mean, let's not beat around the bush. It was a pretty rough effort, especially for the offense.
Yeah, like Ganji 22-39, 216 TD, two picks. Like, come on. The first quarter it was nuts. It was nobody could score, but it's like punt, fumble, punt. Jeez, they get a field goal finally, but they were getting all these short drives for, like, just reading off the play chart, which is just boring. But just looking at what they did, the defense did pretty good in the first quarter or first half. First quarter and first half. Like, they forced a fourth and goal, stopped them, which is huge. They had to turn out three plays now and punt to flip field position where Vanderbilt just, oh, well, let's go 50-plus yards and get a touchdown, then a fumble, then a touchdown. There was, like, nothing going great until the end of the half where they got that field goal and touchdown. But The offense, like, I know we kind of joke, Vanderbilt's defense is usually pretty good and they showed up for this, but it's not like they're a team where scoring 41 points is kind of out of the norm for them.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you're wrong about that. I think it could have been a lot worse had the defense not came out. And, you know, even though things kind of got away from them in the second half, I still kind of think they played okay, if only because, you know, like you mentioned, they did, you know, force two turnovers.
Yeah.
They did have 9 tackles for loss. And they did put pressure on Kyle Shermer when he was dropping back to pass every so often. So there were some positives there. It's just, you know, it was one of those things where, especially in the second half, they just weren't able to keep up, especially since the offense really kind of sputtered, except for those two drives, or especially, well, let's narrow it down.
Yeah.
The one touchdown drive near the end of the first half where they looked most like themselves, kind of moving the ball down the field, especially through the air. You know, that was, I think, Ty Gandy's best drive of the afternoon. And he was a little bit off for the rest of it.
Yeah, and these are the games where we could see more of these coming for Nevada, because if their offense doesn't score, they're in trouble. And so, like, getting blown, like, when they play pretty good teams, not necessarily this one, but if they play Boise State, when they play Boise, when they play teams that can move the ball and score points, like when they play UNLV, who did pretty good versus UTEP, but the games are either going to be a shootout or they get blown out. I don't think there's going to be, like, a 10 or 14-point loss for Nevada on the schedule for the most part. It's going to
be. You don't think so?
Well, there could be, but you know what I mean? Like, when they're playing teams, it's most likely going to be a 7 or fewer difference, or they get blown out. It's just the way they play.
That's an interesting thought. I don't know. If only because it seems like they've shown more of a propensity, at least, to be able to create turnovers. You know, they have 3 in the first few games, which is, you know, not bad. But one of the things that's been a big takeaway is that they've given the ball away 5 times, which is, you know, not so good. And, you know, we talked about it in the preview. One of the other big things in this game was that the running game just never really got it going. So, I mean, we could talk about Ganji, who was, you know, 22 of 39, 216 yards, touchdown, 2 interceptions. But Kelton Moore was basically a non-factor. He only had 5 carries. He only had 9 yards. They did give a little more playing time to Toa Tawa and Devontae Lee. But, I mean, between the two of them, they only had 12 carries and 35 yards. So that's the biggest thing at this point. Like, if they have to be one-dimensional in order to win games, that, I think, is going to be the bigger, you know, sticking point for this team taking a step forward.
Well, you're right, because each guy had 6 carries, like the leading guys. And so
yeah.
It's not like this was a game where it eventually got out of hand, because they lost by 31 points. But again, at 17-10 at half, you're obviously still in the game. There's a few other things I'll get to in a second here, but, like, it was pretty close. You know what I mean? Like, this wasn't a game where it was out of hand early on where they had to run. Yeah, they're down 20-10. Even at 20-10, okay, we got this. We're still in range. But then there's a touchdown within a minute. So it was 27-10. Then they had to start passing.
Yeah.
That's what happened. It's like, when you look at how the second half started for them, it was clearly not what you want to see when you're close game, 17-10, and then they go out and score short, whatever. They get the ball back quickly, score with basically 10 points in 90 seconds, so just about. And that's ball game, essentially, when they're down that much and defense can't stop anybody. But interesting stat, like, they held Vanderbilt to 4 of 12 on third downs. It's a pretty big deal. That's pretty good for this defense.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's definitely a positive.
There's a couple things. I'm trying to look for something here, but it's just the offense turned it over 4 times. They're -2, and that's probably a main reason they lost. -2 in the passing game, it didn't put up 300-plus yards, which they kind of got to do to win games, I think. And run, and run the ball, too. I guess running the ball, that's pretty big, too, right? I guess.
Yeah, definitely. Any other thoughts?
No, I think we're good. We were pretty confident in the win, but I'm just surprised at how it just didn't show up there, really, 41-10.
Yeah.
All right, Air Force, Florida Atlantic. Oh, man. So, was this game on Facebook or CBS? Apparently, it's some controversy on this, or issues.
The way it turned out, it was on Facebook, but it was produced by CBS Sports.
See, I knew that CUSA was doing that in a bunch of games, but I never realized that was the case in this particular game. Everything I saw was CBS until we got some DMs from some people say, hey, wait a minute. But whatever, it was cool. You get to see it on Facebook. It's a good production as well. But I was just curious about that because we had mentioned CBS, so we apologize for that, folks. But Yeah, we'll be, our post blew up, so people found it, right? Because there was enough confusion for people to read our stuff, so thank you for that.
And by the way, what, between that and the Utah State game and those who were, you know, going from our preview to
Hawaii,
you know, to download the Stadium app to watch the Hawaii game, thank you guys for a big weekend.
Hey, Stadium, want to help us out?
Yeah, exactly, right?
Just saying, a couple thousand views went your way. It was a great day. We had our second biggest day ever, which is awesome. So, but as for the game itself, not exactly as planned. 33-27, Florida Atlantic was victorious. Wasn't there some sort of delay in this game, weather delay at the beginning also?
There was. It was a lot of inclement weather, so there was a delayed kickoff.
So here's the thing. My biggest thing I learned from this game, Air Force, throw against Air Force. Throw the ball as much as you can. Don't even run the ball. Just throw it.
Well, we knew kind of coming into this game that one of their biggest problems, and this is a multi-season problem at this point, is, you know, giving up big plays in the air. And it seemed like they just couldn't get a stop, you know, against Chris Robeson to save their lives, especially in the first half. He was 12 of 13 after the first quarter for 81 yards and 21 of 24 for 224 yards. And the score that they had right before halftime, it was kind of rough to watch, even though they did a fairly good job of containing Devin Singletary. You know, he only ended up with how many yards? I think it was 57 yards.
57. He's supposed to be like this big, huge deal.
Yeah, and his longest run was 36 yards. So, you know, maybe if you're a San Diego State fan, you can feel Air Force's pain right here.
Yeah.
But, you know, give credit because they didn't have to give up, they didn't have to, you know, stay in this game. They were down 19-7 at halftime, but managed to kind of claw their way back into this game and make it really uncomfortable for them. They didn't really ever stop the passing game at all. Robeson ended up with 471 yards passing. But they needed every single one of those yards to kind of stay ahead of the Falcons because they came out and did their thing. And it was a surprise because it was Isaiah Sanders that was under center rather than Arian Worthman.
That's right. We should mention that from the start. It was a. Was there a reason why that was the case?
I wasn't able to find anything on that. I was very surprised by that fact. But, you know, we talked about in the preview, are they going to be able to answer the bell when it came to throwing the football? And in this case, yeah, he was 8 of 13. He did have an interception, but he also averaged over 20 yards per pass and had a touchdown. So in that case, you know, that's a huge win. And the guys that we were talking about being able to make an impact on the ground, Cole Fagan came out. He averaged 5 yards per carry. He had 80 yards. You know, Nolan Erickson averaged 5.5 yards per carry. So eventually they were able to get it done with a balanced attack and really keep the Owls on their heels. And the defense stepped up too. You know, they ended up with 9 tackles for loss. They didn't really break up very many passes, but they were able to force Florida Atlantic into a game that I'm not sure that they wanted to play down the stretch. And they almost came back and won it. They were an onside kick away. Mm-hmm. You know, actually, they did recover the last onside kick, but Sanders threw the interception that closed out the game.
Yeah, here's the thing. They had the punt return for touchdown. Mm-hmm. Block punt. Apologize. 33-27. They get the ball on the onside kick. And he said the interception. So they had that chance there to get back in the game because there was it's under a minute, so it's pretty tricky. Not Aaron Rodgers out there who just apparently had to come back tonight. Good for him. Sorry.
Yeah.
Everybody, Eli Becker's like, what does basketball season start now after they give up a 20-0 lead? But there's another opportunity earlier in the game where it was 25-20. Air Force gets a touchdown. I believe it's third quarter. They have a decent drive. 7 plays, 340, 69 yards, get a touchdown, force a punt. Then they Air Force punts on their own 3-and-out. Okay, that stinks. They force FAU to punt again. It's like, all right, they get a nice 8-play drive deep in their own territory, get just past midfield, had to punt the ball. So they had a couple, probably 3 good chances to get this game. But they just could not get it done when they needed to. And then after that, they had like 11-play drive that ended in nothing when they just got stalled again on 4th-and-18. What are you going to do? They had plenty of chances, I think, to make something happen. But also one telling stat, when they are 2 of 11 on third downs, that's going to kill you. And while FAU goes, it's solid 7 of 13.
I mean, I think if there's a takeaway, it's that, you know, they proved that they're still going to be a headache for a lot of Mountain West teams. because even though they didn't win the game, let's not forget they did cover.
Yeah, there you go.
That counts for something.
Officially, Arian Wirthman was replaced.
Okay.
Looking at the recap from the from Brent Brigham, just saying he was replaced. That's all. It was a week earlier, and I've been. That's all. It was just replaced. Nothing.
It's going to be very interesting to see how that situation shakes out.
And so, yeah, that's the issue there. So, and we saw him last year, like when he played at the end of last year, when they replaced Wirthman with Isaiah there. It was a Sanders. It was a played a pretty big deal, pretty mm-hmm. well, I should say. Sorry, let me get my English correctly. Jeez, correct. Oh boy, this is a talking thing, right? Are we just talking out loud?
yeah, I think that's what we're doing right now.
But you're right. FAU is also a pretty good team. Like, yes, they got crushed by Oklahoma. Oklahoma is really good, so their Air Force probably would not have been much closer either. So the Air Force is off next week. They're still 1-1, so they're fine. We'll see how it goes. But if they switch the quarterback, maybe they want to do it to see how they do and get ready for the bye week, and he's the guy the rest of the way. I think either guy gives them a good chance to win, so I don't see there's a huge difference. Maybe Sanders throws a bit better. Maybe that's what they're looking at because you said 7-13. But next game. Is the next game Wyoming, Missouri? Is that where we're going here?
Unfortunately, yes.
All right, so I had a new bowl rankings recently. Wyoming, you're out. Sorry. The offense is kind of what we thought it would be. Terrible.
the offense is struggling,
and
I
too.
Wonder how much that has to do now with the caliber of opponents that they played in non-conference play. I almost wonder if maybe it's a little bit deceptive because, and there are some common opponents that we'll talk about or that we have talked about because they looked really good against New Mexico State. And then struggled a lot against Washington State and now against Missouri. They lost 40-13, and it didn't ever look really competitive.
Well, common thread there, they both teams like to pass a lot. Drew Locke and Washington State.
Gardner Minshew.
Yeah, I started thinking from that. I was going to say somebody else. I'm like, no. But yeah, that's the thing. They were defense. How much is it true, do you think, with the defense that, like, here's the thing, the offense, the defense is given no chance. Like, three plays fumble. They force a missed field goal. Wyoming punts three and out. Six plays punt. Three plays punt. Look at all these short drives. Five plays punt. Six plays punt. Look how many times they had. They didn't have a double-digit drive, I don't think, the entire game.
I mean, I don't think so.
No, they did not.
The telling thing to me is that in the first half, they were outgained 307 yards to 84.
Well, that too. But what I'm getting at too, it's like, yeah, the defense gave up 40 points, but the offense didn't do them any favors when they are out there for a couple plays. Defense does some good stuff, but then Missouri goes a 7-play drive. They have a 10-play drive, a 9-play, 12-play drive. I don't care how good your defense is, you'll get worn down and tired. And that's kind of what happened in this game. There's kind of those final three drives. Yeah, Missouri missed a field goal, but then every play they had a 10-9, 12-play drive where defense just kind of got, what are they going to do?
Yeah, I mean, I think, maybe you could make the case that it was a little disappointing that the front four wasn't able to create a lot of pressure because, they didn't get any sacks and they only had three tackles for loss. But again, when you're just getting picked apart through the air like that, and there's only so much you can do when the other side of the ball isn't holding up. And, for the second straight week, Tyler VanderWaal just didn't get it done. And maybe this is part of the learning experience of a redshirt freshman under center, but he's going to have to do better than 13 of 28 for 160 yards if this team wants to get a chance at clawing their way back into your bowl picture, among other things.
Yeah, but also, here's the thing too, like, Drew Locke's going to be an NFL quarterback pretty soon. He's pretty
That's
good.
That's true.
And so, but here's the thing, how many guys in Wyoming defense could be in the NFL? About maybe 4 to 6, possibly?
You would think so.
And they are 14-20 on third down? Come on. It's like, I'm not blaming it all. I know it's part of both, but Missouri's going to be probably better than people thought. But they did Washington State. They held them pretty well for 3-plus quarters. I don't know, maybe it's just bigger opponents the whole week. But these guys, like everybody says how good they are on defense, not that they don't got to show up. Like, they do some decent things. But this game was, you're right, not even close. 16-0 at the half. It's like, I was kind of hoping like this game would be sort of close.
Well, I mean, they put themselves under a lot of pressure just because they weren't doing what they needed to do, especially on early downs. And if you go back and look at those third downs, you know, what you'll see, especially early, is they were putting Vanderwall into a lot of third and long situations, like, you know, third and 11, third and 9, third and 14, and it never really let up throughout the game. Like, three of the last four third down conversions that they had were 9, 10, and 14 yards. For an offense that strives to be balanced, you know, they're going to have to get more production out of the running game. And even though they missed Nico Evans in this game, you know, they needed someone else to step up, and Javon Bigelow was, you know, he was fine. You know, he had 56 yards, but, you know, they just need a little bit more on the ground game in order to really survive.
So out of all their third downs, all but three were for 4 yards or less.
Yeah, that's hard to overcome.
Yeah, when you're, like I said, when
against any defense.
Yeah, any like you mentioned those, I'm like, oh, let me scroll through where you're going. But yeah, they had a third and six, but outside of that, like three with 4 yards or fewer, it's like that's setting yourself up to fail when your offense and you don't have your starting running back, your quarterback's just okay and learning, you're on the road. So it's, does this change too much of your opinion on Wyoming? I know it's super early still. They got Wofford next week. That should be fine. They got Boise State the week after or 2 weeks after that. So,
I mean, I remember hearing from people that, you know, my relatively lukewarm take on Wyoming, because if you recall, I had them finishing 6-6 this year. Mm-hmm. And I heard about it from some Wyoming people. And, you know, if they underperform against good teams but are good enough to beat up against bad teams, then I think ultimately where you end up is somewhere around 6-6. So to answer your question, at the moment, no. I would say, you know, this is still not a moment to panic, even if they're suffering lopsided losses against Power 5 teams. Mm-hmm. The good thing is that I don't think there's any more Power 5 teams on the schedule.
No. Boise State? No? Okay.
Well, yeah, maybe at this point, yeah.
But here's the thing.
I mean, if they struggle in the games that you would expect them to struggle, but are better in the games that you would expect them to be more competitive, then I think with, you know, a seasoned defense and a young offense that's young in pretty much every aspect, as a Wyoming fan, that may be all you can ask for in 2018.
Here's the thing. Their schedule, oh boy, really quick. I could mention Wofford. Okay. Host Boise, then go to Hawaii, then go to Fresno, then host Utah State.
It's an uphill climb.
Yeah, and then depending what team CSU puts on the field, who knows? And, well, I guess the way Mike Bobo coaches in rivalry games, it's a win.
I think they still have a chance to be competitive, but they're going to have to fix the offense in a hurry.
All right, should we get to Arkansas State and Colorado State?
You mean Arkansas.
Or I did it again.
By the way, fun fact.
Oh, boy.
This was the only game on the entire schedule this week that every single one of our staff members got wrong.
Everyone got wrong. From
everybody picked Arkansas.
Even our two CSU guys had no faith.
Everybody,
in
that, even yeah,
that is everybody.
even Brad and Josh bet against the Rams.
So we're looking pretty good at that pick too early on. The way Arkansas was up, because it was at one point. I'm trying to pull up.
It was 27-9.
That's what it was, 27-9. So what happened? Did the missed field goal really propel the Rams to win? That late field goal where it was 27-9, then they score a touchdown, punt, score a touchdown, force a punt. They forced like three drives of five or fewer plays, and Arkansas had to punt the rest of the way.
Well, I think what happened is the defense came out and played its best quarter of the year when they absolutely needed it. And, you know, if you step back and look at the game as a whole, I think you could definitely say that for 60 minutes, this was their best defensive performance of the year. And, you know, granted, there were still some things to work on because they did allow 299 yards on the ground.
That's a lot.
But I think it was a huge win for them that they were able to keep the Arkansas passing game in check, because between the two quarterbacks, Ty Story and Cole Kelly, they only finished 11 of 22 and they only had 138 yards. Even though they did have the two touchdowns, it was the two critical picks, interceptions that they had. Yeah.
My story.
So, you know, granted, there are some things to work on, but the defense stepped up after a couple of weeks where, you know, it would have been really easy for the wheels to fall off.
And almost fell off of this game, man. I'm just saying.
Almost, yeah. And even with the offense, too. Like, Mike Bobo, he was, you know, messing around with Colin Hill again for some reason.
I don't know. It's...
I mean, the move just didn't work. But, you know, give credit to KJ Carter-Samuels because he came out and, again, he rallied the troops in the second half.
You know what I like about this? Preston Williams to make that diving catch at the end of the game, get to the 1 yard line.
Oh, yeah. That was a heads-up play.
He came back, got the sliding ball, 1 yard line. He's like, I'm reading some quotes. He's like, hey, I might as well catch the ball if he's getting hit every time because he got hurried, what, four times? I don't know how many times sack, just one sack, mm-hmm. but he was getting harassed all day, Curtis Samuels.
Yeah, Curtis Samuels was nails in the fourth quarter. He was 13 of 15 for 150 yards.
That's elite.
That is.
Is our...
and he finished with 389 yards on the afternoon.
Are we... Here's the thing about the Rams. Like, what do we make of them? Because the Hawaii game and then the game... geez, I don't remember last week. It's a week ago. Who did they play last week?
Colorado.
And Colorado looks pretty good. They beat one on the road to beat Nebraska. So they may be that we're overlooking that a little bit, but you only score 13 points. And Arkansas is probably a fringe bowl team in the SEC, but they come to town. It's like, why? First off, like, why the heck are we going to freaking Fort Collins to play a Mountain West team? It's like, what is this nonsense? They go there, have a big lead. Could it have been just being altitude a little bit late in the game?
You know, maybe. I don't know.
It's always something.
I think after three games, this is my working theory about Colorado State right now.
You have one?
They're kind of like the mirror image of Hawaii, which we'll talk about later.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point.
Because I think it seems fair to say that the Rams have a very capable offense, and you know, a defense that, you know, even after three games, even after the comeback, you know, and playing very well in the second half, I still think it's fair to say that they might be a little bit suspect. And, you know, when you look at this Hawaii team, you know, they're kind of the same way. They have a suspect defense and they have what looks to be a very good offense. It's just that the results have been kind of flipped between these two teams, where Colorado State's been behind the eight ball more often than not, and Hawaii has been able to get ahead and kind of survive despite a shaky defense. So I think ultimately what you're going to get for the rest of the season, I don't know, is it an adventure? Because it seems like the kind of team where they might have to outscore teams to get ahead, especially in the Mountain Division.
So let me ask you this. They play Colorado State. They go to Florida, who just lost to Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a disaster waiting to happen?
Hard to say. I mean, I think Colorado State's... I've seen enough of Colorado State to think that they still have a chance on the road.
Just so you know, they're 19-point road dog.
I mean, that seems high.
That's a lot of points.
That seems like a lot of points right now.
We'll see. But it's, I guess, the passing game, like Carter Samuels, yeah, last week was kind of played terrible, but I think he's the real deal. I just don't want to see Coach Bobo just kind of jerk around, especially once Hill is healthy. Because here's the thing. Is he playing around with the redshirt rule? Or is Colin Hill already redshirted once? I don't recall.
I don't recall.
Because he got hurt ACL before, too. Mm-hmm. But so I'll disregard the comment, but it's like, why is he coming in for a few plays? Because, again, remember, it's late February, so it's March, April, May, June, July, August, or September. It's about 7 months from his surgery or injury. So I don't know. That's something to watch, but good for the Rams. Maybe they're back where they could be, where we thought earlier in the year, about 6 wins, 7 wins possibly. But it's good to see them come back and not just have a deficit where they just kind of don't recover from, or don't, not that they're not trying, but they didn't get blown out again. That's a good thing. Like, down the points, they're down, and then to come back, and then not just, they just got the victory, and that's great. And we were all wrong, apparently. We're all dead wrong.
Well, and one of the other things that made a difference was, you know, not only did Preston Williams have another very big game, 12 catches, 150 yards, and 2 scores, they got Cameron Butler back, a tight end, too. And he's one of those guys that very quietly could make a huge difference for this offense. And he certainly did against Arkansas. He finished with 4 catches, but he had 107 yards, including a 54-yarder.
Yeah, and then you got him, Johnson, and then Kinsey from backfield caught 4 receptions.
Mm-hmm.
There could be something there. So maybe getting an extra weapon out there. And Obasi Johnson is usually pretty good. Pretty well. So let's move on. Next game, is it your game now, Matt? Is it Fred? Do we need to go to Fresno?
Yes.
So the first part of this game was ugly.
That depends on your perspective.
Sure. Well, okay. Let me not say ugly. They were down, and the offense was not producing.
Offense was abysmal. Let's put it that way.
Was it you that tweeted out that Tim Drueter's just chuckling and laughing somewhere?
What my exact quote was grinning or nodding with grim familiarity.
Him and Dave Schramm.
Yeah.
So it's I made the remark that hey, this offense will be like percentage wise statistically better. Maybe Minnesota's defense is really good. I don't know. But when the offense has six plays a punt, an interception, they punt every time in the first half, they're not moving the ball, defense did fine. Within 10-0, they did fine, right? I guess defense did reasonably well in the first half. Get up 10 points, that's fine. But then, geez, how did you watch this game in the second half, Matt? Punt, 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 fumble.
I have no idea what the offense was doing for like three quarters. It was really infuriating to watch because they were getting cute in instances where they really should not have. You know, I think it was in the third quarter. You know, they had fairly good field position. And then for some reason, they call an end around. That goes backwards for 5 yards.
Is Andy Lugwood calling plays for right now? Jeez. You wish
it. It was little things like that, or just the fact that they were, for some reason, they were running Josh Hokett, you know, north and south rather, or east and west rather than north and south. You know, Hokett's a guy who punishes defensive linemen in the trenches, and for whatever reason, they were, you know, running stretch plays with him. And, you know, Marcus McMarion just wasn't getting it done for the better part of three quarters. You know, he had a really brutal interception in the first half when it looked like the offense was, you know, getting things together. He threw an interception against his body. But, you know, to the Bulldogs' credit, the defense played extremely well because, you know, even though Minnesota had like one good drive in the first half, on the whole, this defense gave them every opportunity to not only stay in this game, but to win it. You know, Zach Anakstad only finished 16 of 26 for 175 yards. And after Rodney Smith was knocked out, he only managed a carry before he was lost to injury. The two guys that replaced him averaged right around 3 yards carry. So they were slowing down the Gophers offense about as much as they could, but it wasn't until the fourth quarter that they were able to do anything about it.
I joke, but look at the second half. Minnesota's possession, 3-3-3, 4 plays fumble. Like, that's their first 4 possessions in the second half. It's just the offense was just mirroring that, essentially.
Yeah, and then, you know, their first scoring drive was set up by the defense.
Yeah, fumble.
It was, Tank Kelly with the fumble. I think it was Tyler Johnson that had the fumble. And then action to Jared Rice in the back of the end zone. That was exactly the kind of play that they should have been doing all along. And then their second scoring drive, which gave them the lead in the fourth quarter, was a huge catch and run by Keyshawn Johnson, who I don't think it was any fault of his own, but he disappeared for huge stretches of this game. Even though he finished with 6 catches for 89 yards, it wasn't really until that last scoring drive that he had any kind of significant impact. And then, of course, you know, did you get a chance to watch that last drive?
I should have. I did not. What was you tell me how it went down?
So what everybody's talking about is the very last play that they had. And if you haven't read the recap of my game, you can find it there.
Maybe I should read our stuff you put up there, Matt. I'm sorry. This week I was super busy, so I missed a ton of what I normally would watch. So,
first and goal at the 4.
I'll watch it right now as you tell me about this.
So if you didn't watch it, Fresno has first and goal at the 4.
That's pretty close, right? The 4-yard line?
With 90 seconds left. And it's a gutsy play call. It's super ballsy. They run a halfback pass to Josh Hokett.
Who are they, Boise State?
But here's the thing. Minnesota got pressure on him a lot faster than I think anybody anticipated. Like, somebody on that defense read it. I forget exactly who. And it forced Hokett to throw, you know, it forced him to underthrow Jared Rice in the back of the end zone. Because if you go back and look at it, you know, the split second reaction that I had was that Rice was open. And with, you know, just a little more oomph on that pass, Fresno State's able to tie this game or go for the win if they want to. But, you know, credit the Gophers, because not only did they get pressure on him, but Antoine Winfield was able to recover. There was, like, I think 3 or 4 yards between him.
He was so open. Throw it higher. He's so open. Oh, my goodness.
He just didn't have enough arm behind it. And it was the kind of play that they ran multiple times last year, and it was very successful. And so, you know, there were a lot of people who hated the play call.
It worked.
I liked it. It would have worked.
There was enough time to make that throw. Here's what I'm saying. I watched the play again, because if you watch the cover, the blitz that covered the defense, whoever was the pulling offensive lineman whiffs on whoever he's supposed to guard.
Mm-hmm.
If he even just clips him in the shoulder, he has enough time to make that pass, because he'll get off his back foot. Give him that two-tenths of a second, just lob it up there. It's a touchdown. Jeez, I feel your pain, Matt.
I mean, it's one of those things that they're going to want to walk back.
Yeah. I know, because here's the thing. If they do a play-action play, that guy's still coming through. Maybe the Hulk gets the guy who comes open. That play could still be there, but you don't know.
But my big takeaway is, what does it say about Marcus McMarion?
You don't give him the ball?
That they took the ball out of his hands. You know, when they get to crunch time like that, because to his credit, you know, in the fourth quarter, he was 8 of 11 for 111 yards. You know, he had those two long critical drives that gave them the lead. And I saw other people arguing that that's the kind of play, the halfback pass, that is, that you would want to call on a later down, like third down, once you give yourself a chance to kind of go for the end zone in a more traditional way.
But
do you think there's any significance there? Because I've been kind of grappling with that for the last 24 hours.
So this was a second
down? I don't know. It was a first down play.
You catch him off guard doing that, too, on first down.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
And
I was just trying to figure out whether there was any deeper meaning to the fact that they took the ball out of McMarion's hands.
Maybe a lot. No, I think that that's something to say. Because here's what they're thinking. Typically in those plays, if the guy's not open, you throw it out of bounds.
That's true.
So you have second, third, and fourth down. You have three more chances. You don't expect it to be intercepted like that.
That's true.
And so that's the thing where maybe – but there is. You have your best guy. And here's another part to think about too. Your McMarion, he's throwing very well. Yeah, you normally – like, example, I watched the Packers just now. That Rodgers crushed the Bears' dreams two times in a row, essentially, end of this game. And, yes, you want to give him the ball. Are they ever going to give it to Jamal Williams or running back into a halfback pass? Probably not. And not that situation. It just tells me a couple things. He's not that he's not trusted, but he's not an elite 1% quarterback. Very few people are. And so it's a couple things. Maybe they overthought themselves because, hey, let's do this play. They know he's doing well. They'll expect him to throw. And I don't know. You can see both sides, but I think on first down, it's a gamble. Here's the thing. It's always a gamble if you have somebody that's not a quarterback throwing the ball. There's always bad things that can happen. I'm not against the play because the play worked. Had the lineman just touched a guy with like a hand, a pinky, pushed him off half of like a 10-degree turn, you know what I mean? Just breathe on him and push him out of the way a tiny bit, that would have been a touchdown. It was a fine play to do. It wasn't anything that McMarion did wrong, the Hokett or the receiver. It was the guy on the line who didn't touch the guy who had a clear shot at the running back.
Yeah.
That's what it is. The play was
I love this stupid game. and I hate it so much sometimes.
Hey, I hear you. Utah nearly lost to Northern Illinois.
That's true.
And I'm like, what the
Let's go ahead and move on before I start getting upset again.
Okay. Is a Utah State game we're going to face to Facebook?
The beatdown in Logan.
Special teams for the win. Right?
Good Lord, Aggies. and that could go either way because
60
points. Yeah, Utah 60. State showed up and New Mexico State, oof.
They did not. And remember Romero, 3 picks. You had Jordan Love have a – like Jordan Love just was – wasn't even great. He was okay. Not even okay.
But he didn't need to be.
No, you had Gerald Bright, the JUCO transfer, finally showed up. A 51-yarder, Thompson, 68-yarder, 2 touchdowns. Those two guys almost had 250 yards between the two. Even El Toro Allen had a touchdown run. Good, congratulations, El Toro. But here's the thing, too. This game could have been a lot worse. Wasn't it 6 field goals?
There were six field goals.
There could have been a lot more points.
Dominic Eberle, if I remember correctly, he tied the NCAA record for most kicking points in a game.
This game could have been 80 points. No joke. Just saying.
It probably could have. Because how many turnovers did they have? I know Love had an interception. Did they have any fumbles too?
Let me look and see here. Turnover margin. Yeah, they were plus
three. They did lose a fumble as well.
5-2. So, geez. But yeah, they field goal. They had so many field goals in this game. It's ridiculous. And there are some weren't very close, but those 50-yard field goals, man, geez, he's nailing it. He better be special teams player of the week. Just saying. Nationally.
I think if you're a Utah State fan, you could make an argument for a couple of guys, because not only did Eberle kick six field goals, Savon Scarver, that dude is fast.
Yeah.
And he had a 100-yard kick return for a touchdown.
Mm-hmm. Also, their kicker, he's like, everybody here in Utah is like, University of Utah's guy, Matt Guy, is amazing, first team All-American. Well, I guess he's right behind him. Utah State kicker is right there with
him. That's true.
It's like one of the best kickers in the country. And so SI, whoever put a kicker, not Utah State, at number 100 player, get out of my face. That was ridiculous. Just put a kicker in general, and it's not one of these two guys. So Utah, this is the most points they've had in years. I don't know when, I'm just kind of saying that, but I'm pretty sure it's most points in years. And this is a bigger beatdown as we compare opponents a little bit. Wyoming only put up, 27 and looked dominant. Where did you put Utah State? Have you done your power poll this week, Matt?
I have. And I wish I had taken a screenshot. I'm pretty sure I put them fourth.
Fourth?
I think so.
Did you vote quickly or later in the day?
I voted pretty quickly in the day.
Let me see, because I'll pull up the rankings here. But I went with Hawaii second. Not because of 3-0, but they are 3-0. That's a big deal for me. So really quick, we got our poll up. Oh, a lot of people voted today. Thank you for voting quickly, our friends here. You didn't happen to put San Diego State second, did you? Was that you?
That was not me.
Okay. I see that. You probably voted. I voted first or second. I don't know where you voted. Maybe, well, whatever.
Mine was the one where I put Fresno State second.
You have Hawaii fifth. Or Utah State fifth.
Okay, yeah. That sounds right.
Okay, all right. So you went, just a heads up, it's going to be unanimous number one this week, as it should be. Just say it. Boise State rolling through for almost everybody who's voted. So after that, it is all over the place. We have a CSU second place, a Fresno, a Hawaii, a San Diego State. So,
well, yeah. let's answer a question that came up when we were scavenging for questions ahead of this podcast. Our Utah State guy, Logan Jones, wanted to know if we thought that Dominic Eberle was already the best kicker in Mountain West history.
Ooh. There's a guy I like. Luis Sakota's pretty good years ago. He's clutch for University of Utah.
Mm-hmm.
Extremely clutch. So I'm biased because I'm a Utah guy, but every time it came down to kicks, he would, on the road at Michigan, coming back versus Oregon State, he was kick, and just never missed.
Yeah, I think I would agree with you. My answer is not yet.
Yeah,
because even at the moment, he might not even be the best kicker in the Mountain West right now. I only say that because I'm thinking about it in terms of what people have done, not only in one week, but just in their career. And so I went to Sports Reference because I wanted to make sure I had a more complete answer for this. Right now, Dominic Eberle, I think it had included his six field goals, but his field goal percentage was about 78%. And among kickers in the conference who have had at least 50 attempts, that would only rank sixth, just ahead of Wyatt Bryan. And, you know, assuming he can, you know, continue that same pace, you know, he'll probably end up in the top five as far as accuracy. But, you know, top five is not number one. And you mentioned Luis Sakota. He's number two all time in the conference. He was 57 of 66 for his career. That's 86%.
Yeah, he was pretty good.
And, you know, San Diego State fans will point to the fact that John Barron is the most accurate kicker in the conference right now, and they would be right because I believe it's around 85%. He hasn't made that 50 field goal cut yet either.
Also,
I would say Eberle has a chance, but, you know, he's got to put some work in because, you know, Sakota was an All-American kicker, mm-hmm. but he wasn't the only one in the Mountain West. The year before that, John Sullivan from New Mexico.
Mm-hmm. Pretty good.
He was pretty good that year.
So, was this a makeup because Eberle was 2-6 last year in the Arizona Bowl? It cost him the game.
It was definitely a redemption performance. But let's also give a shout out to Tipa Galiai. That guy was a beast on defense. And I say that even knowing that the Aggies had 12 tackles for loss and 5 sacks against New Mexico State. But that dude, the more I looked at him, the more I looked like he's an all-conference caliber performer.
No, you're definitely true. This defense is like, okay, it is New Mexico State, so take that for what it's worth. They're not very good offensively. But still, what they did, like him and, like, look at these guys. Like, look how many sacks in TFL. They had 5 sacks and 12 TFLs.
Mm-hmm.
Jeez, 4 QB hurries. Does this so let me ask you this. We had talked about the kicker thing. Is it Utah State? They play Tennessee Tech, Air Force. Are they going to actually challenge Boise this year, end of the year?
I mean, I think that we were both in agreement before the season started that they would be in the mix. So I really haven't seen anything through the first couple of games to say otherwise.
I'd say they're better than I thought because I don't think I put them number 2. I think I had, for some reason, Wyoming, but that was a foolish moment. I'm just glad the offense is showing up because that was always the concern I've had the past couple of years.
Yeah.
Running games seems to be there. Jordan Love, even though this game wasn't great, he did okay. He's been fine. He's the guy, so good stuff. All right, let's move on to where are we going next here?
UTEP and UNLV. Rebels running all over the Miners, 52-24.
Thank you, Rebels, for showing up and having Lexington Thomas, Armani Rogers, Charles Williams at the big game, come back from injury, 80 yards. Also, UTEP's one of the worst teams in the country, so...
I'll say it again. UTEP might be the worst team in the country.
Do we need to do a... not San Jose State. You think? Cause, so can we get a UTEP-San Jose State 13 game?
I don't know. Would anybody want to watch that?
It is football.
I mean, did you look at this drive chart from this game?
Actually, no. Let me pull it up here.
I'll just.
I got it now. But go for it. What do we got here?
Touchdown! 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 Punt! Touchdown! Field goal! Touchdown! Touchdown!
A lot of touchdowns in there.
and it wasn't. There weren't a lot of cheap touchdowns either. You know, I think four of the 6 touchdowns were at least 75-yard drives or better. And that's a credit to that running game because you mentioned all those guys and they ran as a team, 414 yards.
Who are they, Air Force? Army?
No, they're just the running Rebels.
Exactly. And, like, the passing game didn't need to be there, 6-13, but still, how was this awesome? 3 touchdowns, 6 completions.
Well, and the defense, you know, did exactly what you would expect them to do against an offense like UTEP. You know, they had 6 tackles for loss. Gabe McCoy had a pretty big game. He had 2 tackles for loss and a sack. You know, they forced a couple of fumbles. They had an interception. They did everything right in this game. And, I mean, I feel bad for UTEP, but, you know, a win's a win, and UNLV is going to take that to the bank.
As they should. But I guess the small concern, they gave a good amount of rushing yards to a quarterback, and they had 24 points. That's fine for them, but that's the only thing if I'm looking at something weird. Just say, hey, careful.
Yeah, I suppose that's true.
But that's fine. Let's move on. Is it San Jose State, Washington State next? We kind of just glossed through real quick.
Well, not yet. We got to go to San Diego State first.
Oh, we do? Do we have to?
We have to.
Okay, so...
I wish I had been able to see this game.
Yeah, me too. It's one of the weird, not even streaming Mountless Network games, and maybe it should have because it's close. Sac State, 14. San Diego State, 28. Christian Chapman, quarterback, goes down with an injury. Ryan Agnew, who's been the quarterback in waiting forever, can never surpass Chapman. Should why is the quarterback in waiting with 2 interceptions? But thank goodness there's Jawan Washington.
That's true. I mean, I think... Between the first 2 games, he's definitely shown that he can handle that running back one workload. 36 carries, 156 yards, 3 touchdowns.
There you go. So I'm trying to say, like, hey, I was not correct. I was not wrong. The air show was why there was 45,000 people at this game. And so I guess it's a back injury. I haven't seen an update on this yet, but
I believe in our guy Ted's recap, it was a sprain of some kind.
Oh, because I'm looking here. I looked at that. And I was also looking at the Union Tribune. I thought it said a back thing. Oh, there. Oh, sorry. There it is. Left knee sprain. Correct. Oh, he's hitting the back. I apologize. I'm reading that improperly. So, I don't know, hitting the back. Whatever. That's weird written, but it says a left knee sprain, which doesn't seem all that bad. But, okay, I'm calling BS on this quote right here from Rocky Long. When asked for an update after the game, Rocky Long says, the doctor wouldn't tell me.
Oh, I don't believe that.
It goes on to say, he said he doesn't know for sure. So he did tell you something. He's going to wait till he gets MRI on Sunday, and after that he reads MRI, we'll know exactly what's up. But don't tell me the doctor wouldn't tell me. He told you something.
Yeah, you would think.
You can just say, hey, we need an MRI on Monday. He's not sure just by looking at it. We'll let you know then. Don't say doctor wouldn't tell me. Then he goes on to tell me what the doctor said.
Yeah, that doesn't make a lot of sense.
Rocky, does he need his meds for the evening? Is this a late game or something? Just saying, he's up there in age. So, it was just a cut block. That's what it was. Yeah, cut block where he got hurt. But,
well, okay. So let's prognosticate for a moment.
Yeah.
Because when you go back and look at what Chapman did in this game, you know, he was a little bit uneven. He was only 6 of 11, but he did have 112 yards.
So, but which, par for the course. Sorry.
But, you know, they had more big plays in the first half than I think anybody would have expected. You know, they only had 4 different guys catch a pass in the first half, but each of them had a long of at least 16 yards. You know, Ethan Dedeau had a 27-yard catch. Mm-hmm. Cahill Waring had a 26-yard catch. He had 3 for 73. And after halftime, you know, Agnew, he ended up okay. He was 11 of 17, but he had 2 interceptions.
Yeah.
Which really prevented the Aztecs from running away with this game. So if Chapman is out for an extended period of time, like, I know that we know who he is at this point. But should you be concerned if he's out for an extended period of time?
Yeah, because what Chapman does is he doesn't turn the ball over. And Agnew, seriously, he's been the guy who's supposed to be the guy quarterback since he arrived on campus years ago, and he can never beat anybody out to be the – remember they had to bring on the punt guy like last year with Chapman was hurt just to give guys snaps? Like, mm-hmm. Agnew struggled in spring practice during that time. So he's been there. For him, the positives, he's been there for a while, a junior. But he hasn't been able to do anything to prove he should be anything more than what he is at the moment. Maybe he's a guy who just plays well in games. But he didn't in this game. He had 2 picks, so I can't really say that either. Maybe if he gets a week of practice, he does something. But I'm concerned because, like we said, Chapman's a guy, like I joked with the earlier start with the Austin Hornibrook thing, where his numbers aren't always great, but there's drives like we've seen him beating Stanford, going that long drive versus Wyoming. He can do when they need him to do it. He'll do it. It's just not often where he's going to throw 30 plus times a game. You have 350 yards.
It seemed like the defense. It seems like the box score strikes me as a lot like the Fresno State Minnesota game. The defense did its part.
Yeah,
because the 2 touchdown drives that Sacramento State had were basically the only offense they had all game long. You know, they had 5 tackles for loss. They had 3 sacks. And, you know, and then everybody contributed. So, I mean, I think the defense will be able to keep them in games. But, you know, when you look ahead to the rest of their non-conference schedule, Eastern Michigan just went out and beat a Big Ten team. They beat Purdue, right?
Oh, I missed that. I didn't see that. Good for Eastern Michigan.
Well, Eastern Michigan beat Purdue, who should be pretty good, I think, all things considered.
Yeah, Jeff
Brown. And Arizona State just went out and finished what Utah State started by beating Michigan State. So if Chapman is out, you know, we kind of know his strengths and his weaknesses, but, you know, that they're going to have to be ready if he's out for that long.
And yeah, they play both those teams back-to-back. They host Arizona State, then host Eastern Michigan.
So it's going to be something to watch in the weeks to come.
Let's just say Michigan State, sorry, you're not very good this year. See ya.
Yeah.
Because maybe Arizona State's good, but it's like we joked to Herm Edwards thing. He apparently got something done. So I don't know. It's still funny they hired Herm. So, all right. So, what do we got next year?
We got Boise State 62, UConn 7.
How many records did they set on offense?
At least one, 818 yards of total offense.
Okay. Serious question. Was this speak to one up UCF?
I mean, I don't think Brian Harsin or anybody on that team would ever come out and say it, but I think subconsciously probably.
Because what was that score? They put up, what, 40-something points, 50 points, I think? Let me pull it up real quick. But regardless, okay, it's 56-17 for the UConn versus UCF. They've given up over 100 points in only 2 games.
They just blitzed poor UConn. And watching that game, like, you know, yeah, it was only UConn, but I couldn't help thinking, like, this is the best team in the group of five. And anybody who's arguing for UCF at this point is just an idiot.
Oh, I thought we're going to go there this week.
No, we're going there every – I mean, you can stay out of it if you want.
No, I like to lean into it as well.
I will lead the charge on this one.
But UCF is good, though, right? They're a good team.
They're good, but Mackenzie Milton just threw three INTs against an FCS team, so you tell me.
Well, they won 38-0.
Yeah.
But you're right. That's a fair point.
But you know what UCF didn't do? They didn't contain David Pindell like Boise State did. Because, you know, we talked about the fact that he's a dual threat guy. Well, he only had 40 yards on the ground, and he completed less than 50% of his passes for 71 yards and his touchdown.
Yeah, he had over 400 combined and two touchdowns versus UCF.
And even though, you know, the disruptive plays don't really jump off the stat sheet, you know, they only had four tackles for loss. I'm trying to look up how many offensive plays the Huskies actually had. They only ran 46 plays on offense.
Yeah, and also Moe even suit up and play either. It's like, geez, imagine if
and
he
neither,
played.
And if I remember correctly, neither did Tyson Maeva.
I think you're right. Yeah, a couple guys didn't play. This game, like, I know it's too early to say. We'll know next week because they play Oklahoma State. They're currently, even though Boise's ranked higher, 3.5-point underdog on the road. So that'll be the game next week. Like, this game, Boise hasn't done that since they've been in a whack, beating teams this bad. Like, Troy probably could win the Sun Belt this year. They're going to be pretty good. Yeah, UConn's awful, but they put up 56 points on a Troy team who's always usually nine wins minimum typically. Yeah, so yeah, it's Sun Belt, but they're always usually good. And, well, I was going to say, see at Troy, did they beat FAMU, but whatever, 59-7, as you should. They go to Nebraska next week and stuff, but, like, it is too early to say how good this team is, but Boise's already in the top 20, 17th, I think, and 19th in the polls. They leapfrog UCF in the AP poll because they're behind by one spot, so it's...
Well, what they've done in the first couple of weeks is, to me at least, what I expected them to do coming out the gate in non-conference play last year, where, you know, they have a fully healthy Alexander Madison, for one.
True.
And he went over 100 yards. He had 115 yards and two touchdowns. And Brett Rypien is playing like the number one player in the entire conference.
You know what that and does? Hey, we picked him number one, and then you don't have stupid Montel Kozar coming in every now and then because whatever Brian Harsin and Zach Hill were doing last year were just a bunch of dummies. I'll say it.
And Brett Rypien came out yesterday and went 21 of 28 for 362 yards and three touchdowns. That's no big deal.
So ESPN FPI, Boise State, after that victory, rose 7% chance higher to make the playoff. They were a 9% chance team to make a playoff at the moment.
Well, I mean, we both mentioned that they climbed to 17 in the AP poll. Is that right?
I believe they're 7. I can double check, but they're up pretty high. They moved up both polls, yeah.
I've argued all along that that's where they should have started.
Yeah, I'd say maybe 20 to lowest probably would have been the lowest you could say. Oh, maybe put them there. But we know why that is. It's because, oh, they're Boise State. They don't play anybody good. They're never great. They're currently, just really quick, because I should keep track of this. I'll talk to our Boise guys because Raj and Eric and those guys and Colin do great stuff. They're sitting at a 15% chance of winning out. 70%, 68.9% to win the conference. They are currently at, I wish I had the better FPI breakdown. I want the whole country. Maybe I'll look at that later and do a post or something. But 9% chance, just really quick, where that kind of stands, a bunch of everybody else. Georgia shot up huge to like 22%. They're basically, they're basically a coin flip to make the playoff. I don't know why Oklahoma might change with their running back being out because he's gone for the year now. Michigan State still given a 1% chance. But you have like really quick Washington 11, Auburn 10, Notre Dame sitting at 23, but they are huge droppers on this. I don't know, Penn State. This is just risers and falls. I'm trying to find the whole thing. But hey, give me a 1 in 10 chance to make the playoff. I'll take that, right?
Absolutely.
Just about.
I mean, that's better than I think any group of five teams is going to see in a long time. Oh, and by the way,
where's UCF on that list?
I don't know. I don't care.
Just saying.
But
sorry,
by the way, Boise State is also up to number 5 in S&P Plus as well.
That's pretty good. How is let me ask this though. Real quick, Boise's 15 FPI. I happen to have it up just because. How is Michigan State number 14 FPI?
I have no idea.
They have FPI is weird, but Boise, yeah, 15 FPI. I don't know the differences too much between FPI and all that stuff and the S&P Plus. But I'm looking for Slater, but I wonder where the guy, because there's just a screenshot of a guy who tweeted out like, here's the playoff updates. I'll look at that because when you go to the full ESPN Power Index, they just have like remaining SOS, win percentage out, win probability. Then so yeah, we'll see. I'll look at that further, but that's yeah. They did what they did. They crushed a team, and then they go on the road to Oklahoma State, who is, like I said, they're 3.5-point favorite in that game at home, which is probably what they should be because they're at home. They're ranked. This is probably
the, that's the game of the month.
But it's not a – yeah, but shouldn't this like be game day? Why are they going somewhere else this weekend?
Oh, who knows? They got an excuse for everything.
Do we – where do they say they're going? Do we have that in front? Because I'd like to see that real quick if we did.
I do not know.
Dang it, I want to find out. You got Stanford. Is they going back to – oh, it's LSU-Auburn, which – okay, that's fine. That's well, a better
– whatever. They can go there anytime.
They could. Hey, it's a top 12 matchup, man. Come on.
Yeah, whatever.
I'm just saying. That's it's better than what it could be sometimes for dissing these teams, right?
LSU's going to lose like three games, and we're all going to wonder why they were in the top 10.
Are they Texas?
Yeah.
Did you see real quick somebody had to admit because game day was at Texas A&M. They had – you see the sign about the dissolving Texas logo?
I did.
That was great.
That's very good.
That was one of the better signs. I'm like, oh, excellent. All right, so let's move on. There ain't nothing else to say. They crushed them. This game, it's been announced next week, a 11:15 a.m. Pacific ESPN game. So that's a pretty good spot for them. So, yeah. All right, next, what do we got here?
Washington State 31, San Jose State nothing.
Oh, that's right. I was scrolling down to see. I don't know. Montelaren played most of the game, right? He started, so.
He did.
Tyler Nevin still not playing injury, but Minshew, what are we going to say? 400-plus yards, 3 touchdowns, 2 picks. This game was over in the first half when it was 24-0.
Yeah, they were just dropping bombs in the passing game on this team. They ended
up with
Washington State ended up with 12 plays of over 15 yards through the air.
How bad is San Jose State?
Pretty bad. I mean, if we could keep this real short, but I don't know how this team is going to turn it around.
Winless. I'm calling right now winless.
You think so?
Well, here's the thing, real quick. Oh, we'll bust their schedule and move on. At Oregon, they're already a 40-point dog. Host Hawaii, even though, geez, I'm sorry, Warriors, for predicting that as you're not going your way. CSU at home, Army at home, at San Diego State, UNLV at home. At Utah State, host Nevada. Maybe Nevada if something weird happens at Fresno. Like, the most winnable game is hosting Nevada, I think.
I mean, I don't know.
And even because, then, I'm like, that's no.
Because, I mean, in the opener, we saw the offense come to life and the defense buckled down a little bit.
Dude,
and then
you're playing UC Davis and FCS school. Come on.
Oh, I know that. I'm just saying. But then to like go out in the first quarter against Washington State and get outgained 197-7.
Yeah.
It's just, and then by the end of the first half to be outgained 316-23, that, like, what is that?
Here's the thing. I'm looking at FPI again. I guess he's updated. I'm assuming they're updated because they have the loss from Washington State. They're giving them the best chance to win a game is hosting Hawaii at 45%. There's no way that game's like a coin flip.
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean,
losing Tyler Nevins could not have been that significant, but the offense, the running game was just kind of non-existent. Malik Roberson had 12 carries for 33 yards.
Yeah.
And Montel Aaron got sacked, what, 7 times?
Too many.
5 times. It's just, I don't know where this team goes from here. It's because it's certainly not going to get any better against Oregon.
No, they're not going to beat Oregon. I don't know. We don't need to run through all this, but there's nothing
there. They did cover.
Oh, good. I guess let's see. If you want to do that, I guess we could play that game to help.
No,
optimistic.
I mean, maybe we could do that later the air.
No. I mean, we'll put that in our picks every week. That's what I'm saying. We'll make picks. All right, let's move on. Final game: Rice versus Hawaii. Go Bows. Okay, here's the thing. I'm calling right now. I'm going to get a hold of some guys. We're going to make a Throw Bows t-shirt. That has to be done, right?
Nice.
These are the Throw Bows, B-O-W-S. Cole McDonald is the second best quarterback. I need to do my QB rankings. I have not done them in a week and a half because my Saturdays have been nuts and my week has been nuts. But this week they're back. 318 yards, four touchdowns, 66% completion percentage.
I want to propose a nickname for Cole McDonald.
Ooh, what do you got here?
I think his nickname should be Clean.
Clean Cole?
Clean Cole McDonald.
Okay, that's not bad. That's pretty good. That's solid.
Because he's so clean throwing the football.
He has no interceptions this year.
He has 13 touchdowns. I put it out earlier on Twitter. But, you know, the record for touchdown passes in a year is 50. And that was when Derek Carr had it back in 2013.
What, NCAA record? FBS record?
No, it's just the conference record.
Oh, sorry, conference. Okay.
But if McDonald throws as many attempts as Carr did in 2013 this year, with the pace that he's on right now, he's going to end up with 78 touchdowns.
And zero interceptions.
And zero interceptions. But I mean, it wasn't even just him in this game too. Like the running game bounced back.
Freddie Holly
the third had 100 yards and two touchdowns.
Can we just call him Hollywood? Clean Cole in Hollywood?
Yeah, maybe. But we'll petition our listeners on that one. Let us know what you think on Twitter at MWC Wire. But, you know, the offense stepped up and the defense stepped up too. I think, you know, we've talked about how that's been kind of their biggest Achilles heel thus far, even though they're outscoring everybody. Through three games, they're still giving up over 7 yards of play. But in this game, they held Rice pretty much in check for long enough to run away with it. You know, the Owls only ended up with, what, I think 481 yards of offense, which doesn't sound great. But they did take a step forward in allowing, or excuse me, 446. I was looking at the wrong one. Mm-hmm. But they only allowed about 6 yards per play. It was 6.2. And that is a step in the right direction.
Yeah. And like Hawaii's defense is still a concern, though.
Like, yeah, yes and no.
29 points. I mean, part of it is the offense they run to. If they can do, because run and shoot's not always just mean fast tempo, but they're prone for big plays. Mm-hmm. Like they had. A couple seven-play touchdown drives, eight plays, maybe not this game, but some of it is they score so many points, defense goes back out there. Like, the second half, they had this four-play touchdown. Let's see, five-play touchdown, whatever. Oh, the one play, that's the end of the game, a 49-yarder, 46-yard, excuse me, the run by Holly. So that's a little bit to that, but Rice isn't very good either. So, but
I mean, it could have been more lopsided, too, because Rice had four fumbles, but only lost one of them.
Yeah, I saw that, yeah.
And so, you know, those vagaries of fumble luck kind of played in Rice's favor.
Well, also, Hawaii lost two. You know what I mean? They could have the same thing.
That's true.
So,
but I mean, let's give credit to the defense, because there was a few long Rice drives, but then at the same time, I'm trying to remember when it was. I think it was early in the second half. They had a goal line stand, which eventually turned into a safety, so that was a little bit strange. But, you know, they had opportunities to stop Rice, and they did. That was one of the things that I pointed to in my preview, is like when they're within like the 40 to the 20, can they make stops? And there were at least a couple instances in this game where they were able to do that. You know, they had the goal line stand, and they had at least one or two other drives where they stopped them. You know, and they held them to field goals, or they just were able to turn them over on downs. And that, I think, represents an improvement, you know, for a team that looked like they would just have to win track meets in the first couple of games. You know, if they can keep that up against Army, and especially against San Jose State, you know, you've been talking up the bandwagon of, you know, 6-0 or beyond.
I said that after they won the first game. That could be a possibility.
I know. I'm just saying.
I need to write my piece and do it right now, because I've been on the Hawaii bandwagon after week one.
But if they can keep...
I'm the president of the bandwagon.
But if they can keep taking those steps forward on defense...
Yeah, that's a concern for me, yeah.
Things are going to get very interesting in the West Division.
So here's what I'm looking at while you're chatting right now. So, you know who they do not play this year?
They do not play Boise State.
Do you know how you host a Mountain West title game?
It's conference record, right?
That's number one conference record. No, I'm just saying, odds of Boise are losing toward Hawaii losing... Let me pull up my schedule super quick here, because they do play San Diego State to end the season, and they play also Fresno, both road games. Those are tough, obviously. We'd assume they still are. However, if you don't play the best team in the conference, and I'm just saying, there's a chance the Islands could be hosting Mountain West title game. I'm just saying, there's a small chance at the moment.
Wouldn't that be something?
That would be amazing. However, have you seen the early line for Army Hawaii?
If I remember your tweet from earlier this evening, it was what, Army minus 9?
I don't know what it was at the moment, but right now it's minus 7. FPI gives them an 84% chance to win in Army, I'm saying. This is out in New York, out there on CBS Sports Network at the home of the West Point. Yeah, they're predicting Army to win this game, who's already 1-1.
Well, don't count out the Warriors.
Okay, here's the thing. Army lost to Duke and beat Liberty. Come on. How are they a favorite by a touchdown?
Well, I mean, Liberty's kind of trash. Duke might actually be pretty good.
Yeah, but lost by 20.
That's true.
However, one note, obviously this is the time zone thing. It's a 6 a.m. Hawaii kick.
We'll talk about that more in the preview.
I'm just saying, that's the thing to look for. Noon Eastern kick.
But I think that offense is going to give them a chance anywhere.
But remember, also, Army beat San Diego State last year, so.
Yeah.
All right, we have some questions here. I'm trying to pull up as we're going here. We have quite a few. Early odds, no, don't need to do that. Crap, do I have my podcast questions? Here we go. Raj, talk about Boise State. We sort of did. There you go. Colin, yeah, we did. Okay. Logan, okay, we talked about that. Here, last one for our good buddy Fake Matt Mummy, who's awesome, playing in our fantasy football league, which I need to check my record on because I'm 2-0 on one of them, at least last week.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Is Hawaii for real? Heck yeah, they are. Seriously.
I'm still waiting and seeing. I want to see that defense keep taking steps forward.
What would you mean for real? Bowl game? Would that be for real?
I don't know. I guess.
I'm just thinking about, like,
how would you define for real? I don't know. It's hard to say.
I should have followed up with him. I'd say a bowl game this year would be, say, they're for real. Because there's a decent chance they could lose these road games at Army at Fresno at San Diego State and still finish like 9-3 or something.
That's true.
So
I think at that point you would have to consider them for real.
I'm saying if they're 6-0 before they play Wyoming, yeah, they're for real. End of September.
All right. I'm okay with that.
I'm still going for that. If they better be ranked, because they're getting points. If they're 6-0 end of the month, they have to be ranked.
They better be.
Yes. All right, next game. How many Mountain West teams will make bowl games this year? Hey, good that you asked. I just did my bowl predictions before we hopped on the podcast. We did have a foolish 8 to start the year, bowl eligible teams. I'm down to 6 at the moment.
That sounds about right.
And that's slightly above their average. I have, which I guess, Boise, obviously, I have, let's see, really quick, Utah State, UNLV, San Diego State, Fresno, and Hawaii, and UNLV.
All right.
So I guess, do you think, are those the top teams you think that should be represented this week?
I think if CSU continues to rally, you can make the case for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was thinking about them too. Wyoming is out of the picture for you?
For the moment, yeah.
Okay, all right. It makes sense. Me too. So we know exactly what we're doing. We're on the same page here. Last one. Why hasn't Craig Thompson's hair gone gray in 20 plus years?
Because he's not trying hard enough.
Oh.
So he's not stressed out.
There's no stressful? Because it was. There was the initial coin flip when it was CSU boys, or BYU, excuse me, for the first conference game back in 99. The first conference game 20 years later is at CSU. Looks basically the same. Suit still fits awkwardly. A little too big, I think. and he looks almost the same in 20 years. That's not bad, man. It's like Paul Rudd stuff going on there, right?
Yeah, something like that.
Just saying. So I like your answer better because he's not trying hard enough. He's not worried about something because we've seen him not try to pump up the league or all shucks. I guess the Gonzaga deal's off again. And the Gonzaga president's like, wait, what? We haven't even met yet, buddy. Why is this not going on?
Huh.
Those are some good questions there. Anything else we need to add? Are we good to go?
I think we're all set.
There was something I was going to say, but I completely spaced on it. I'll hold this announcement for later because me, Eli, and a few others, you may know this, Matt, but I'm probably being pretty vague. There's something pretty cool coming during the about 4 months away from now, 5 months, so stay tuned.
That's a tease.
I don't know why I said that, but we're working on something. I'll give you a better clue. You know our buddy Ryan Swanson, who writes some historical stuff?
Yes, I do.
I'll just leave it at that. And we mentioned Craig Thompson 20 years later. I'm just saying.
Okay. All right.
We'll be back. We're still figuring out our weekly schedule for weekday sort of. We'll see how it goes. But thanks for tuning in. Thanks for the second most people ever joining our website on Saturday. Hopefully that number gets to be minuscule and we don't count anymore for that. But thank you for hopping by. MWR.com. Also, hey, really quick. Everybody loves Swoobu apparently because we put a link like, hey, we want to help you out. If you want that same deal, trial type stuff, go to MWCWire.com. Go to the very bottom. There's a FUBO link plus other stuff. That's how I got CBS Network for a while, or Sports Network. So just saying, we see people going through, so we appreciate that as well.
But just keep creating fake emails to get those free trials.
Hey, how many? I got plenty of credit cards, Matt. I have plenty, plenty of debit cards, plenty of email addresses. So I am been using – I've gone different routes. I wanted to try YouTube. I want to try FUBO. I've tried different ones. But I've tried FUBO. But just saying, seriously, it works great. I used it for at least a week. But, yeah, use a different credit card, different debit, different ebook. Hey, go buy a prepaid card that doesn't cost you any money to fill it up and do that for a week just so it has a dollar.
That's smart.
So it has like that. You know what I mean? Put $10 on there. And then
that's a thinking college football fan's plan.
That's the outside the box, because it takes a buck out and you get a dollar back. And for the people who continue to pay for it, I'm glad it helped out, because that helps us out quite a bit. And it's awesome. It's just a way to not to worry about it. Like for me, I have an apartment complex. CBS Sports Networks cost a bunch of money to add on. So I'm holding off, Matt, as much as I can. I may have to get it mid-season, but I'm trying to save that $25 a month or whatever maybe to add, like I said last week, like three channels I want. So, And it happens to be CBS. So, all right, that's it for tonight. Enough spill shilling for the end of the show. But MWR.com, Facebook, Twitter, Mountain West Wire. And thanks for stopping by, and we'll see you next time, folks.